From Elizabethtown to Latrobe, Danville to Beaver Falls, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Pennsylvania legislature returned to session this past week, and the House made progress on several bills to aid the victims of sexual abuse. State Representative Stephen Bloom joins us with details. A House committee took the first steps toward replacing school district property taxes with a higher personal income tax. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have details on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And the tariff war is causing financial problems for some Pennsylvania companies. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Stephen Bloom in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The surging U.S. economy has created a problem for many businesses, a lack of qualified people to fill open positions. In an effort to tackle that problem, the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission, or PUC, has launched what they call the hashtag Utility Careers Initiative. PUC Chairwoman Gladys Brown said the goal is to spotlight the fact there are many family-sustaining, well-paying jobs. Brown said such jobs often, quote, hide in plain sight because people are unaware of the job opportunities in the utility sector. Various state agencies and educational institutions are participating in the push to recruit and train workers for careers in the utility sector. On a related note, unemployment in Pennsylvania continued its downward trend in the month of August. According to the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry, the state's unemployment rate stands at 4.1%, just above the national average of 3.9%. That is the lowest unemployment rate that Pennsylvania has seen since July of 2000. More than 5,000 people have moved off the unemployment rolls and into employment. Added with those rejoining the workforce, unemployment is up by 14,000 people since the beginning of the year. The one and only scheduled debate between Governor Tom Wolf and his Republican challenger, former state senator Scott Wagner, will take place on Monday at the annual dinner of the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry. The gubernatorial race has so far been relatively low-key, as Wolf has avoided the campaign spotlight. The chamber debate will be moderated by game show host Alex Trebek, who is the featured speaker at the dinner. Wagner has strongly criticized Wolf for ducking additional debates. The governor maintains the differences between he and Wagner are stark, and therefore no debates are needed. Read about these stories and more at the all-new patownhall.com. The sex abuse scandal roiling the Catholic Church dominated the legislative agenda this past week as lawmakers returned from a lengthy summer break. In addition to offering victims a window to file civil suits, other legislation making it easier for child abuse victims to offer testimony moved forward. Here to talk about all of this is State Representative Stephen Bloom. Steve represents the 199th Legislative District, which is in Cumberland County. Steve, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Steve, there's one particular piece of legislation we want to start out with, this involving the victims of crime. Tell us a little bit about a bill that you've authored and you've been pushing. Tell us what the tender years exception is and why you think it's important.
House Bill 2321 is the bill that I introduced earlier this year, and it's part of a package of three bills that came out of the House Judiciary Committee to help particularly young victims of sexual abuse and crimes in that arena. What we have in Pennsylvania is there's a thing called the tender years exception. It started out as a common law doctrine. It was put into statute several decades ago. And what it says is that in the case where you have a child, a victim who is young and for whom the court determines that testifying in a courtroom, as you normally would do if you're a witness or a victim of a crime, would be detrimental to the well-being of that child, there are certain situations where that child is allowed to testify in a private setting, so they won't be re-traumatized by the testimony, and then that testimony can still be used as evidence in the case. And So that's the tender years exception to the hearsay rule. And tender years just means a young person who's at a tender age. And the hearsay rule is the basic rule that you can't use out-of-court statements or statements that someone else says they heard someone say as evidence in a courtroom. But they're saying in this particular case you can, to help convict a perpetrator of a crime against a young child. But since that was enacted, since the tender years exception was enacted many years ago, there have been a whole list of new crimes and offenses put into statute here in Pennsylvania to deal with crimes that were either not known in the past or simply often weren't even properly prosecuted. So my bill simply updates and adds to the tender years exception a whole list of modern day crimes that are now on the books so that child's testimony could be used without re-traumatizing the child to convict a perpetrator of a crime against a child. That would include kidnapping, human trafficking, certain sexual offenses, sexual exploitation, sexual abuse of children, unlawful contact with a minor, a whole endangering the welfare of children, a whole set of important laws on the books to try to protect children. But now that the perpetrators of those crimes are more likely to be able to be held accountable because of this bill. The bill did pass the House over the summer, right before the summer break, and then it just recently passed the Senate Committee on Judiciary. And in fact, I just noticed that as we talk here, it looks like yesterday it actually cleared the Senate Appropriations Committee. So it's primed for a vote in the Senate, and if the Senate would enact it, it would then go straight to Governor Wolf's desk for presumably his signature. There are a couple other bills in that package. One expanded the idea of the tender years exception to individuals with intellectual disabilities. So a child with autism or a child with some other intellectual disability who might be traumatized by having to testify in court could also fall under the purview of the tender years exception. And then there was also a modernization and expansion of the Commonwealth's rape shield law. Again, all with the idea that we want to make sure perpetrators of these sexual crimes are held accountable.
Sounds like this is making a lot of progress, and hopefully we'll get across the finish line before the session ends here at the end of November. Now, Steve, this has been an emotional week at the Capitol. There's been a big spotlight on the victims of clergy abuse in the Catholic Church in the wake of the grand jury report being made public by the Attorney General. The House did take some action on that this past week. Tell us what the House did and your thoughts on the House's action.
Well, as you know, the grand jury report that was recently released documented some just absolutely heinous conduct on the part of individuals within the Catholic Church in particular. That was the target of this investigation. And just horrific abuse of primarily children, boys and girls, at the hands of folks who had the authority or the respectability that comes along with being either a member of the clergy or the church hierarchy. And so it was really disappointing to read that. I read most of that report, and it was just repulsive and sad and tragic. And so there's been an effort to try to make sure that there's some accountability for victims who were abused potentially many, many years ago in some cases, who under current statutes of limitations had no legal ability to file a claim, either for civil liability or to prosecute a criminal case against the perpetrators. And so there's been an effort on the part, and I think it's a good faith bipartisan effort across both the House and the Senate to make sure that these victims have some opportunity to be compensated and to see justice be done to their perpetrators to the extent those perpetrators are still alive. Many of the perpetrators have actually passed away by now, and there's nothing can be done against them, obviously, criminally. But a number of proposals have been on floating around the chambers for the last couple years to try to address this. Some wanted to simply extend the statute of limitations retroactively backwards for 30 years or even further, and others were more restrictive. The problem is, under Pennsylvania's Constitution, there's an issue with going back in time to take away a right that someone thought that they had. And there's generally a prohibition against that idea, but at the same time, there's been a desire to do justice for these victims. So the bill that came before us this week was more or less a compromise proposal, but it followed the recommendations of the Pennsylvania Grand Jury Report to create a two-year window for these past victims of crimes of an abusive nature to file a suit, and then that two-year window would open up and then close, and that would be your last opportunity to essentially seek civil damages for those kinds of cases. That bill ultimately did pass the House the other day. It's now sitting in the Senate waiting for their consideration. It's a tough one because, you know, you're trying to balance the rights of victims with the rights that are afforded under the Pennsylvania Constitution and make sure that it all matches. The two-year window has been tried in some other states, and it has seemed to pass muster in those other states. It's, again, sort of a compromise proposal. I ultimately did vote for it. I liked another proposal that Representative Schemmel from Franklin County had suggested that would have created a victims fund that would have been clearly constitutional, well, no doubt. The bill we passed, I think it's constitutional based on my understanding of the law, but it's going to end up in court, and we'll have to find out what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ultimately says about the constitutionality of that bill. I suspect there will be litigation around that in the future years. So it's a step. Now, the Senate isn't necessarily in favor of that bill, and that bill may not go any further. The Senate had some proposals that are more like Representative Schemmel's to create a victims' compensation fund that would not be just opening up a legal window for liability, but actually setting aside a process and a way for victims to receive compensation. That would clearly, no doubt, be constitutional.
We are talking with State Representative Stephen Bloom. He represents the 199th District, that, of course, in Cumberland County. Steve, when we take a look at this, and there are questions about the constitutionality of the bill, isn't this a case, though, of where passing this bill, having it signed into law by the governor, who is in favor of it, and then letting the Supreme Court do its job and allow the Supreme Court rather than the legislature to determine the constitutionality? And should the Supreme Court find that it is not passing constitutional muster, would it not be a practice of the court to perhaps give some direction as to how the law could be then amended to make it constitutional?
That certainly could be the case. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the bill that we passed in the House the other day includes a severability clause so that if any specific provision of it is found unconstitutional, the rest of the bill would stand. So that's important, too, so that the court isn't given broad latitude. They can only address a very narrow piece of the bill if it becomes necessary. Obviously, you don't want to be passing legislation that's unconstitutional. I think we swear an oath to the Constitution as well as elected officials, as members of the legislative branch. So we want to pass constitutional bills. And I believe this bill is constitutional, but I do know it's going to be challenged in court. And I would expect it to hold up, but you know, you never know when you put an item in the hands of the judiciary, how they're going to see it.
And of course, the legislature will be back this coming week. What sort of highlights do we have to look forward to next week?
Well, there's a lot of bills that have been in motion over this last two-year session, and the session's winding down. There's less than 10 session days left. Probably, I think there's six left now. And any bill that doesn't get action in both chambers by the end of that time period, it dies, and it has to be started from scratch in the new legislative session. So there's a lot of pressure on multiple bills. I have some bills that I'd like to see reach the governor's desk, along with the protection for the young children who are victims of sexual abuse that we talked about. I have a bill that would end Pennsylvania's last-in-the-nation penalty against small businesses that do like-kind exchanges of property. Pennsylvania taxes that type of an exchange. The federal government doesn't tax it. No other state taxes it. And it really hampers our small businesses in Pennsylvania. That bill has passed the House. It's sitting over in the Senate. There's a number of other good tax reform bills over there. There's just a whole host, literally thousands of bills with sponsors that would like to see those bills at least come up for a vote before the session ends, and a lot of pressure on leadership to run those bills. So we'll see what happens here in the next remaining few session days that we have.
State Representative Stephen Bloom of the 199th District. And Steve, this is probably the last time we're going to be talking with you as a state representative. You are moving on. However, you're likely going to be back with us again because you're moving on to somebody who we partner with on many occasions. So tell us where you're headed.
Well, I'm excited, Loman, that I am going to be joining the Commonwealth Foundation, and I'll be working in the realm primarily of government affairs. So I'll be right in the thick of the policy battle for good free market policy that empowers all Pennsylvanians to succeed and prosper. So we'll be in the same fight that we've been in. I'll be in a different role, but the same battle for our free market values.
I'm looking forward to continuing the fight with you. State Representative Stephen Bloom. Steve, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Lemon.
The elimination of school district property taxes is the goal, but the money has to come from somewhere, and that somewhere would be a higher personal income tax. Here to discuss the latest developments are Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Frank?
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm your host, Frank Gamrat, and with me today is Allegheny Institute Research Director Eric Montardi. Your latest policy brief talks about the House Finance Committee and their recent debate over extending the homestead exemption for school districts to 100%. Could you please talk about what they are proposing?
Sure. There was a constitutional amendment question last November that asked the voters if they wanted to amend the existing language that allowed local taxing bodies, so counties, municipalities, and school districts to have homestead exemptions, basically reduce the assessed value of a homestead, mm-hmm. which is primary residence. I mean, that's basically what it is. It's an owner-occupied primary residence. The maximum you could do it was up to 50% of the median value. And basically, it was a uniform dollar amount. So if you had a house that was assessed at $500,000, a house that was assessed at $100,000, if the homestead exemption was $20,000, you both got the same $20,000, and then the millage rates were applied. Well, the proposal that was put in front of the voters and was approved was to allow local taxing authorities, same ones, counties, municipalities, and school districts, to go up to 100% of the assessed value. Mm-hmm. So basically to wipe out homestead property taxes, if they so wish. Now, there was no specification on the question how that was going to be accomplished. It was basically just to enable the General Assembly to write legislation that would give permission. Well, this specific bill that got a hearing at the beginning of September was to raise the state personal income tax, which is currently 3.07%, by 1.72 points, which would basically end up with a personal income tax of 4.79%. Mm-hmm. And when that money was generated, that basically would be enough to allow all the school districts in Pennsylvania to eliminate their homestead property taxes for school district purposes. Again, mm-hmm. we're setting aside the counties and municipalities. They're not touched by this mm-hmm. proposal.
Right.
But basically, that's the trade-off. It's sort of like, sure. Let's make a deal, right? It's you want to get rid of the homestead property taxes, so unless you're going to have $7 mm-hmm. billion dollars fall out of the sky annually,
yep.
it has to be made up somewhere. So that was the proposal mm-hmm. that the Finance Committee took up.
Well, that's exactly it. The schools need to be funded. So if you're not going to fund it with property taxes, you have to find an alternative. And I guess this was the alternative that's been kicked around so far. How much school property taxes will need to be replaced as of fiscal 16-17?
That would be $7 billion. That's basically what's generated now mm-hmm. on homesteads across the state by school districts mm-hmm. through property taxes. And that's a little bit more than, I think, half of all the property taxes
okay.
that school districts
right.
collect. That's like around $13 billion or so.
And I imagine that this 1.7% increase to the personal income tax would basically cover exactly or close to exactly that amount?
Yeah, based on the recent year collections. And again, that assumes that mm-hmm. you know there's no changes in behavior. People who
right.
would pay the income tax don't say, well, yeah, now I want to be gone and
move to Florida.
Move to Florida where there mm-hmm. is no income tax. But basically, yeah, it would be an even swap based on the recent year collections.
Mm-hmm. Well, an interesting question that has come up in your brief is, what if a district doesn't want to participate? Is this a mandatory thing or is it an option?
No, it is optional. Basically, if this were to go through, the income tax would go up. There'd be a special account that would be held in Harrisburg as part of the general fund. And then the school districts would have to pass a resolution in order to opt in and participate. Now, this kind of goes back to where we were pre-2006, because when the state legalized slot machines and they wanted to have homestead property relief, which we are getting now, it's not a lot of money,
right.
it was optional. And mm-hmm. not a lot of school districts wanted to get into it. And that's when they went in the special session and said, okay, this is now mandatory. School districts have to do it. If they get gaming money, they have to use it for the homestead property relief. So yeah, this is an optional thing. Now, you would think if it did happen and you had people that were income taxpayers as well as homestead property owners, and they said, wow, I'm paying this higher personal income tax now, and my school district's not getting the relief to wipe out the property taxes. There's going to be a lot of people showing up in front of the school boards and demanding that they participate in this.
Well, that's a great point you bring up, the gaming money, because that's how it was sold to us as property tax relief. And I think, 13 years later, I don't know if too many people has had their school property taxes dented with gaming money. So anyway, someone's listening to this and they're saying, man, great, I hate the school property, let's get rid of it. They're probably happy. In your brief, who might be the winners, who might be the losers in something like this?
Well, you figure if they're both a income tax payer and a homestead owner, then they're going to have some kind of net result, right? Your one tax is going to go up, the other one's going to fall. So if you're a high-income earner and you live in a house that's, cheaper or, not where your income would be. And then you say, well, okay, my tax on my personal income went up. I did wipe out my school tax, but I wasn't paying a lot to begin with. Well, that's fine and good. People who are not paying a lot of personal income tax but live in houses that could be expensive or that, they're taxed at a very high rate, they're going to be very happy because they're going to say, well, on net, I'm going to see the relief when this school property tax would go away. People that just don't get homestead exclusion, that happens now. I mean, we're in Allegheny County. It's one of the – I think it is now the only county that offers a homestead exclusion for county property taxes. They make it up somehow because they didn't shift to something else. They basically just give us, $18,000 off of the assessed value. So if you rent, you're not going to get relief from a homestead exclusion. If you're a commercial property or some other type of or class of property that is not a homestead, you just don't get a homestead exclusion. I mean, this is what the homestead exclusion is. It is a reduction on a specific class of property that is permitted by the Constitution, but it does leave – there are people that won't get it. So when they say, well, now my personal income tax went up, but I don't see any relief, well, and I'm not sure if I'm real happy with that proposal. Again, the same thing kind of like on net when you're comparing the two taxes.
Well, that's a great point. And you also raise another point in the brief that says, okay, let's say this shift happens – and costs are going to rise. You know, one of the things that people tend to forget is that costs go up, pension costs, instructional costs. You know, teachers go on strike, they hold out for more money. If the district's costs are allowed to rise, yet they're going to be limited in what they can change their millages, the millage rate increases will have to fall on the businesses. What repercussions, what can a district do in this scenario?
If there is a pot of money in Harrisburg that's coming from the personal income tax and they're saying this is the piece of that amount that we need that we would have generated from our homesteads at our current millage rates and the values, if the costs go up and those things aren't addressed, then yeah, there's going to be some pressure coming from the school districts on the General Assembly, who will now be the holders or the keepers of this money that's going to be generated through personal income tax and have to send it back to the school district. So that is a very good point. It's something that certainly could happen.
I know that on the surface, everyone wants to see the property taxes eliminated. But like you said at the beginning, the money has to come from somewhere. So I think before they get all excited that this has made its way through a House committee, they need to read your brief. And they can get this brief on our website, AlleghenyInstitute.org. They can follow us on Twitter and get a little more information about this and let the representatives know how they feel. So that's great stuff, and I'd like to thank my colleague Eric for joining me today. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you'd like more information on this or other topics, please visit our website at AlleghenyInstitute.org.
The tariff war has gained steam, and while some industries are benefiting, others are suffering. Here with a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on the impact of tariffs is Beth Ann Mumford from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
The American economy is on the upswing. Americans are returning to the workforce. Earnings are up. Much of this is the result of recent policies that remove barriers to opportunity and give individuals, communities, and businesses the maximal chance to thrive. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was an important step towards unrigging the economy and giving everyday Americans a pay raise and helping entrepreneurs create new jobs. Likewise, efforts to roll back burdensome, unnecessary regulations will help small businesses flourish. We're also encouraged by numerous reforms pursued by Pennsylvania lawmakers at the state level that could lead to greater prosperity, too. It would make sense, then, to double down on these pro-growth policies that are already benefiting so many Pennsylvanians. That could mean making the new tax cuts permanent or freezing federal spending. It could also mean reducing spending and taxes at the state level. Unfortunately, the administration is moving in the opposite direction by imposing trade barriers, such as tariffs, on some of our top trade partners. New tariffs threaten to claw back some of the recent gains we are experiencing. Tariffs, otherwise known as a tax, whether levied on steel, aluminum, pork, or other materials and goods, reduce competition and limit our access to products. Tariffs are a tax on U.S. consumers, workers, and businesses and drive up costs. We need only to hear from some local businesses to see just how destructive tariffs can be. At a recent forum on trade hosted by Americans for Prosperity at the National Press Club, titled Trade Builds America, Chris Scott, president of Pennsylvania-based manufacturing company Howard McRae, shared his thoughts on the impact tariffs could have on his business. Howard McRae manufactures commercial refrigeration and product display units for grocery stores, delis, and other customers. Tariffs on the steel, aluminum, condensing units, and electrical components the company uses to build its products have cut the company's profits 8% since June. Their capital investment is down 50% compared to 5 years ago. If the trade war continues, the Philadelphia-based firm will have greater difficulty competing with its foreign counterparts and will have to consider cost-cutting measures such as reduction of workforce, decreased benefits, deferral of salary increases, or reduced research and development spending. Or Howard McRae will have to increase prices on their customers. But they aren't the only Pennsylvanians that are worried. Chocolate producers, farmers, construction equipment manufacturers like Volvo Construction Equipment and Harley-Davidson worry these measures will raise prices and pinch their bottom lines. Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey agrees, saying, "Tariffs are taxes on American consumers," and pointing out that imposing them weakens our economy. Trade policies that open markets and provide more access to abundant materials and goods benefit Pennsylvanians, not the punitive trade policies from Washington, D.C. As Chris Scott said, we can compete with anybody on price, service, product. What we can't do is compete when the tariffs make it difficult for us. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Find us on the internet at www.afppennsylvania.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRJV-FM in Breezewood, WBXQ-FM in Altoona, along with WXTU-FM in Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.